Hello everyone, welcome to the NRF1 podcast, our 2016 season review, which, just to get this out of the way now, we're going to split into three parts because it's going to be an epic one. We'd like you to, you know, enjoy it over several parts, but it will count as episode 142 of the NRF1 podcast. We are on Audio Boom, on Acast, on iTunes, on Future Radio in Norwich, and we've got an epic Formula One season to review, and epic news at the end of the Formula One season to discuss as well. And get this, we're at the Rush Cutters in Norwich, first we should say, here in Thorpe, Norwich, Norfolk, UK, best part of the world, and a full house. Minus Josh, obviously, but he moved to London, so that was his fault. A full house of podsters. So let's go around the table, shall we?
I had no idea Josh moved to London.
That was Ped. Did you not?
No. Hope you're doing well, Josh. We miss you.
He got his final predictions in. Part three will bring you the winner of the prediction league this year. But Ped, you haven't moved to London.
No. I'm still here, still in Norwich, still having a wonderful time.
You went to Finland.
I did on a recruiting mission to try and get Heikki Kovalainen back in the car. Sad news, he's not having any of it. did see some reindeer and some huskies though, and met Santa. So technically also went to Sweden, but just been jet setting really.
So that move for Pastor Maldonado back to Mercedes, or to Mercedes, is a step closer.
F*** off.
Straight in there. Steve Rust is here. Steve, let's get it out of the way. Your predictions for the final race, as in the words of Ped, parking the bus. How confident are you, come part three, that you will be this year's champion?
I'm pretty confident. The predictions were awesome. I think I actually got a full house.
But don't forget, the pre-season predictions and halfway season predictions had not been included yet, so we had to factor those in too.
I thought you'd put the table up like a couple of races ago or something like that.
Yeah, I did, but the halfway and the pre-season predictions haven't been in. I'm just trying to see where you are psychologically. But those ones hadn't been calculated yet, Steve.
Yeah, balls to me, but
hey, see, mind games, farce.
To be fair, it's been a farce since, I don't know, 2013, mate. It's just all been a joke since then.
So. If it was a real farce, I'd have won it by now, so there we go. Kyle Cumbers is here. Kyle, I listened to one of our older podcasts, and I feel like we should always introduce you now as two times Beckles karting champion.
That's a good point, actually, yeah. 2008, 2009. Exactly.
I mean, that kind of gold needs to be flagged up.
That's not actually that long ago. 2009. It's not that long ago, mate.
It's less than 10 years.
It's less than a decade.
It's less than a decade.
A decade.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, that's why I'm going to introduce you like that forevermore now, Carl.
Thank you very much. Well deserved, I think, for myself.
Do you miss those karting days?
I do, yeah. I still have a kart, technically. So.
Technically?
It's still in the garage. It hasn't been used for a long while.
But you couldn't get it in working order?
Yeah. It's just back into working order after a big blow up early this year. So, maybe next year.
Have you sent your email in to Toto?
I have, actually, yes. Yeah.
And?
No response. I gave him the call today, and he hasn't responded, so...
Oh, he's missed the deadline.
Kyle imposes the deadlines on Mercedes.
4 o'clock. It has... Well...
So I contacted Manisha instead for the Sauber drive, so we'll see where that goes. Still one left, alongside Ericsson.
So Felipe Nasr has not sorted for something.
Because Verlaine was the favourite, but obviously... That's a bit up in the air at the moment, so...
More of that to come in part two. I've got this all planned, I promise you. DT's here, DT. Now, let's talk about what we didn't talk about last time, which was your interview with the Grand Tour people.
Yes, so fresh from London, I recorded the pod last week, and I'd spent the morning with Clarkson, Hammond and May in some posh hotel in St Pancras, and I had I chewed the fat with them and ate wine gums.
How did you find them? Were they delightful?
The wine gums were very nice.
I think that's the best way to answer all that. I'll take that at all. But are you a little bit starstruck? A little bit starstruck.
So I managed not to be that dribbling fanboy, at least from the outside. I was a little bit starstruck, but I managed to get my questions out in a reasonable manner. I have actually listened back to the audio now, and I didn't sound like a complete idiot, except I think one of my questions I asked was a bit stupid, but other than that, yeah, I think I did okay. I was reasonably professional.
So what was that question, first of all?
I think it was towards James May, and I said to him, would you rather read articles written by Jeremy Clarkson and Richard Hammond or have major dental work?
Okay, and
well, I thought it was going to be quite funny, and I thought he would kind of say, I'd rather have Major Dental Work because they're buffoons, but actually he was quite serious about it and said they actually quite like what they write in Major Dental Work. It's like the worst thing I could imagine, so...
Boo! Yeah. Boo that one.
Who was the nicest?
Hammond, I think.
That's what I thought in my head, yeah.
but I will say is they were all really nice. They all came in, shook our hands, they were all very polite, very pleasant. Clarkson sounded a little bit hungover, I must admit.
Hammond, that general?
Yeah, probably. Hammond was very excitable, and James May was exactly who you'd expect him to be.
Which I like. I like that. I'm just thinking, normally at the Rush Cutters we have the train going past, don't we? And this time we've got the coffee machine. So if it's making you want a coffee, I can't argue with that. It's making me want a coffee. So there we go. Mr. Baxter, how are you?
I'm good, yeah. I'm really good. A little bit tired. I had a coffee before I came out, so...
Pumped.
Yes, exactly.
What? I mean, did you feel like you needed a coffee or anything else when the big news broke? Let's get to it. Nico Rosberg retiring from Formula One 5 days after he'd won the world title, to almost the shock of everyone apart from his family.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I was actually out at the time, so I didn't have any signal on my phone. And I got home and had all these messages and notifications pop in, and it said Nico Rosberg retires. And I thought, this is going to be like, you know, this fake Facebook news you get and all that. And I thought, let's have a look. And BBC Sport, the headline, I was like, what? What's happened there? But, I mean, quit while you're on top, fair enough. But it was quite a surprise.
I was busy doing my sports journalism at Colney Training Centre for Norwich City when it popped up, and one of my colleagues said, oh, no, it's not real. It's on ITV.com. Oh, no, hang on, it is real. And we couldn't really believe that it had happened because there was at the time no hint of it. But I guess... Now you look back at it, there maybe were hints. I don't know. It just seems bizarre.
I don't know about whether there were hints of it, but I can understand it. I mean, we have said for a very long time that Rosberg doesn't have the teeth to be world champion, and maybe we were a bit short-sighted in that, and maybe what we meant is he doesn't have the teeth to be one of the greats. You know, you can win a championship, but it doesn't make you an all-time great driver. To do that, you've got to have the drive to get out there and keep winning and winning and winning and winning and drive a dog of a car until its wheels fall off. And we've seen that from some of the greats on the grid at the moment. But I just think it tells you everything you need to know. He's achieved it. It's done. Put it in the history books and then walk away. And I think that's what he's going to... That's where his mindset is. So for Nico, it wasn't about being, like it is for Hamilton, being the greatest driver ever. It was about... I want to be a world champion. Bang, I'm a world champion. Now I'm going to go spend some time with my wife and my daughter.
Just shutting it down like that. And there are drivers who understand. Damon Hill, he was like, yeah, I get it. It takes it out of you. Other drivers who like, can't believe it. Martin Brundle, Norfolk's own. Can't stand it.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty shocked, really. That was just the last thing I would have expected. Because actually a mate of mine texted me and said, look on, you know, Formula One site to see what the news is. And immediately I was thinking it was something to do with Hamilton, like maybe suspended or sacked or something like that. Last thing I expected. I just don't really think it's very good for the sport, you know, because we're not going to have the reigning world champion defend his title. And, I mean, I'm not the biggest Rosberg fan, as you well know, but it just made me sort of think the worst world champion since his dad. It's a bit harsh, sorry, but it's just the way I feel, you know. It's,
at the end of the day, it's his life. If he wants to go do something else, then he's entitled to it. I think it shows how... So the
cheesy garlic bread? Cheesy garlic bread. As you see, final podcast means we have to get some grub in. Breaded chicken there for Ped. That looks lovely. He's happy there. Here's my man. There we go. Good smelling chicken. Kyle.
Where was I?
Something about breaded chicken?
Possibly. I think it does show how hard it is to win a world championship. It's easy. People say, oh, you got the best car, and like Lewis Hamilton, for example, the last 2 years, that's easy. Best car, you can go and win. But it shows the mental struggles you go through for how, what, 8 months, 9 months, whatever, how long it is. That just shows how hard it is.
He said that. I mean, I read some of the statement he released, and he said, you know, my wife basically was doing all of the looking after of our child. She would let me sleep through when I was tired. She would let me, you know, go and do my work, go and do my everything that I needed to do to win. And he said it's been exhausting for him just trying to beat someone like Hamilton. But then you look at someone like Hamilton and you think that that's what he's built for. So for him, that's not exhausting. That's just a day at the office. That's amazing.
It's a good point Steve makes, though. Does he owe it to the sport to defend the title?
Not the sport. Maybe Mercedes a bit, because he's put Mercedes in a difficult position of only a few months before the start of next season. But if he wasn't going to be motivated next year and he'd done his job, then it'd be a waste of a seat next year. So as best he goes now.
See, let's not forget that his first race was Bahrain 2006. So he's been around for a decade now. So it's not like he's done a couple of years, then decided to bow out gracefully, which he is. But I think he is bowing out gracefully. I've been quite vocal in the fact that I'm not Nico Rosberg's biggest fan, but I do understand exactly why he's doing it. I understand his motivations behind it, and I think, fair enough, if that's enough for him, if that's what he set out to do, and he has achieved his goal, and that is it, he doesn't feel the need to go out and prove any more, then he's going to be well remembered for that. I think personally, I think anyway.
So just to be clear, Nico Rosberg's debut in Formula One was longer ago than Kyle's most recent karting championship.
Yes, yeah.
Exactly.
Just to contextualise it for the listener.
Hey, well, that makes Kyle a younger driver. So effectively, you could be, you know, don't just because they haven't got back to you before 4 o'clock, Kyle, don't write it off. That's all I'm saying. There's some quotes here from Lewis Hamilton I think I'll read out. On Nico Rosberg, he said, he's got a family to focus on and wants more children. There you go. Formula One takes so much of your time. Will I miss the rivalry? Of course, he says. It's going to be very, very strange, and it will be sad not to have him in the team next year. The sport will miss him, and I wish him all the best. Of course, it's a shame that he won't allow me to take the title back or fight to take it back. But that is his choice, and I respect his decision. Go out on top while you can. Should Lewis also be quite thankful for this? Because obviously it's since been said that he won't be getting any punishment for all those terrible misdemeanors he was a perpetrator of in Abu Dhabi, such as, you know, racing.
I think Hamilton, knowing Rosberg as he does, obviously over the years they know each other very well, I think he'll be pleased for him, and he understands why he's decided to retire. But, I mean, for Hamilton, I think he'd be more annoyed at the fact that every time he looks back at their career, by the time Rosberg retired, Rosberg can say, oh, I was a better driver than you at that point. Not necessarily better, but he won the World Championship. And I think that will quite annoy Hamilton that he won't get to win it back next year by beating him. So,
do you not think, though, that Lewis can always just come back and say, well, if my engine hadn't blown in Malaysia, I'd have won it?
And that, and also I forced you into retirement. I was that hard to beat. I forced you into retirement. I suppose there's a way you could look at it. But
Lewis Hamilton broke a man. He broke a man on the track.
And just to develop this, though, what has become clear, and I think, to be honest, I thought it was clear after we spoke about it and after what happened at Abu Dhabi on the podium, what have you, there still seems to be a lot of respect between the two drivers. Or is there more needle? Am I misreading that? Or do they leave on... You know, Lewis sent a lovely message to the two of them, presumably before he knew he was going to retire.
Maybe they were just being professional, you know, which they have to do. But I thought the latter stages of the Formula One season, this season, they seemed to be a little bit more on talking terms. You know, didn't seem to be so frosty in some of the situations we used to see.
Less hat throwing.
Well, yeah. But yeah, I mean, maybe they were just sort of just being fairly grown up and professional about it and just going, yeah, you know, fair game.
The other big question is what it means for all our conspiracy theories.
I'm sure I read something somewhere that Toto said it was a surprise to him as well. So I don't think Rosberg told anyone before that race. So
yeah, I think it was Monday. I think he found out, which also makes it quite funny if they had enough of Lewis Hamilton and had a big row afterwards, and Lewis Hamilton said, "Fine, I'm walking," as apparently he tried to do after Spain, and then Rosberg later that day retires, and Mercedes got no drivers for next year.
Step up Pascal indeed. I mean, I did see a line from Niki Lauda that he felt it kind of all made Mercedes look a little bit stupid, because had Nico not have won the championship, he would have hung around and they've almost won their driver out of Formula One.
I don't read anything into it. You saw, I mean, I don't know if you mentioned it, we're talking about conspiracy theories, we mentioned on the pod my friend Nicky T, who has the Mercedes conspiracy. I did reach out to him, and even he sort of said it was a heat of the moment thing, and he doesn't really believe it. And it's, I mean, the first thing I saw was someone put up, Rosberg had informed Mercedes he was going to retire in exchange for the fact that they'd let him win the championship so that he would then walk away at the end of the year. And you just think, how do you undermine the man's competitive integrity in that way? Obviously, you don't get to be one of the 21, 22 best drivers in the world, which we widely acknowledge Formula One races are. You don't get to be that level by taking handouts and getting things given to you. You have a competitive desire, but your motivations, your focus is different depending on the person. As I've said before, Lewis's focus, one of the best ever, better than Ayrton Senna. Nico's focus, in his own words, be a world champion. Well, you're a world champion. Congratulations. Walk away. 10-year career, as DT said. I mean, that's remarkably good. But it's because he's only been relevant over the last maybe 3-4 years that we still think of him as quite a young driver, but he isn't.
All those years, so irrelevant.
So I can break your theory about, you know, the 20, you know, 20, 21, 22, however many best drivers in the world.
Is it because we've got the 2008, 2009 Beckles Karting champion sat here at the table?
I can break it. I can break that theory on one word. That word is Maldonado.
He's not in Formula One right now, so he's not one of the best drivers in the world.
But at the time that he was in Formula One, he supposedly, by your theory, was considered one of the best drivers in the world.
It's Grand Prix winner.
No. Thank you, Michael.
Even Ped's agreeing with that.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So who was better?
Out of who?
Well, when Maldonado was racing, who was better than him that should have been in that seat instead at the time?
You
can make up a name, DT. I can't prove you wrong. My memory's not that good.
No, some fungus maybe, I don't know. Some kind of earthworm,
Kyle.
You know, quicksand.
Kyle.
You've just put Kyle in the same bracket as an earthworm and fungus.
And Pastor Maldonado, so you know.
I think that's more insulting. So.
Rich, you love a conspiracy theory.
Sometimes, yeah. I think after everything that's happened, obviously after Hamilton, it came out, you know, publicly that Hamilton did offer to resign from the team, and obviously now with everything that's happened to Rosberg, and of course all the radio messages we had, it still puts that, you know, that there where you can have doubt as to whether there was some sort of conspiracy going on or not. But I mean, it's kind of hard to, from when you've got your own team, to mess up from the inside. It's kind of hard to do that without everyone knowing, as we know, that's come out with like Flavio Briatore at Renault in 2008, I think it was.
Fair point. If even Rich isn't convinced, I think we can kill it right there. What now then for Mercedes? Should we talk about this? Pastor Maldonado, we're wondering if he'll be turning up next year.
He absolutely won't.
Well, we've got pictorial evidence that he's being lined up for a photo shoot, which Ped's already been enjoying online, and we'll have to put that.
stop. Just stop with the jokes, because it's not funny.
The question is, can you find someone a better option than Pastor Maldonado for that second Mercedes seat?
Yeah, a fungus, an earthworm, Kyle. We've talked about this.
All right. Seriously, who do we put in? In fact, I tell you what. Let's bring you this. Niki Lauda has said, I think we should have a decision before the end of the year. Christmas, we give a Christmas present to one of these drivers. And there's obviously been a lot of them because the phones are running off the hook. There was some great Twitter bants, hashtag twitbants, between Max Verstappen and Mercedes, which I quite enjoyed. Certainly Max's effort. I'm not too sure about the Mercedes side of things. And also we had a question, and this probably puts it best, from Dats Life, our friends at Dats Life podcast. They've asked, if contracts were cancelled for 2017, who do you think would get Rosberg's seat? Good part here. Also, would everyone want his seat? Which is a good question.
Yeah, Vettel. If everyone in Formula One was a free agent, and you've got a German-owned team looking for a German world champion...
The waitress agrees.
Yep, there you go. Yeah, come on. Agree. You need to get closer to the microphone.
I think Vettel would go for it.
Well, what's your name?
Sue.
Well done, Sue. Great job. And she agrees. I mean, it's interesting you brought up the only person who so far said he's definitely not going, because he's can't get out of his contract at Ferrari, or won't.
But you said he won't go, but that's keeping Ferrari happy, isn't it? Would Mercedes want to go... I think there probably would be fireworks with Vettel and Hamilton. Would they want to go through that? Or would they go for somebody like Sergio Perez, if he was free? He's proven to be very good this year.
Last time he was at a mainstream team, though, didn't he?
He's young, he's now matured, and...
The bed, what a lovely expression, Ped.
You're not still eating while I am, sorry.
I mean, a good question, I think, for this is, you're Max Verstappen or Daniel Ricciardo. I mean, Max is obviously joking on Twitter. Do you stay at Red Bull, or do you fancy the Mercedes drive? Because don't forget, we've got a lot of changes that are going to be happening for 2017.
Well, I was talking about this today, funnily enough, and I said if Ricciardo was to go to Mercedes, because he might want to get out of the way of Verstappen, kind of, rather than having Verstappen as his main rival on the same team, even though we could handle him, I think, he might decide to go to Mercedes and go for, you know, the Royal Championship, which he could quite happily do, quite easily do.
Then taking on Lewis?
I think he could do it, because he's proven to be a wheel-to-wheel racer. He's beaten him a few times before. There was 2014, was it, in Hungary, I believe, or it might have been 2015 in Hungary, I can't remember which one it was.
And on Top Gear, good point, Steve. Yeah, good point.
So he's, you know, he's clearly a quick guy. He's likeable as well. I think the two could have a good rivalry if they were there. But what would be more exciting is if Red Bull decided, okay, who are we going to bring up from Toro Rosso? Are they going to recall Kvyat if he ever started driving properly?
No.
Could you imagine Kvyat and Verstappen teammates at Red Bull?
No. In all honesty, you'll see Carlos there, although they had quite a lot of fun last time they were teammates as well. All right, then. Give me two names, everyone. The person you would like it to be who takes over from Nico, and the person you think it will be.
Oh, Jesus, don't come to me first.
I'd like it to be Alonso, just for the pure
s*** and giggles.
Exactly. I think it will be Bottas, and I then think Bottas would be replaced by De Resta.
I think I'd agree with that.
I'd like it to be JB. I'd like him to be Jenson Button. Get old JB back.
Do you reckon they could? I reckon they could convince him to come back if they asked. If they picked up the phone and said, "Yeah, go on then, Jenson."
Jenson is he's a free spirit now. He's a happy-go-lucky guy.
Now.
I think if they offered him a Mercedes, I think he'd probably be. He'd definitely consider it.
Who'll get it?
Pascal Wehrlein, I think.
I'd like it to be Sainz. I think it'll be quite cool to see him in a car at the front. I think it'll be Bottas. I think better shout, if you bookmaker-wise, fancy a bet, Ocon is 14-1 at the moment, which is not a bad shout, as he's still a Mercedes young driver.
They signed, though, hasn't he, for Force India?
But they need the money, and Mercedes could just say, have a couple of free engines, and we'll take Ocon.
Mercedes could probably buy Force India.
Steve?
I think it'll be Wehrlein. But I'd like it to be Palmer.
Jolyon Palmer, shout for that's a left field one.
Keep it British.
Keep it British. Straightforward. You've got to answer it this time, Fed.
Yeah, I will. I'd like it to be anyone but Pastor Maldonado. But I think it will
including
be.
Including Fungus, Earthworm, and Kyle.
Yeah. But I think it will be anyone but Pastor Maldonado.
All right, fair enough. Earthworm Jim, he'd be probably quite handy.
Only if he's in his super suit. When he was out of his super suit, he was useless. He was just a chewy length of worm flesh.
He could probably find room in the car. The technology at Formula One's disposal, especially Mercedes.
Did anyone get that was a lyric from the TV show? Yeah, DT did. Good.
Well done, DT.
Mike just glossed over it.
I was trying to be an Earthworm Jim fan and then just fell flat on my face, really. This is a message for you, our dear NRF1 listeners. In the last year, there is a young British startup that has shaken up the shaving industry. Over 100,000 men have joined Cornerstone and are now getting a smoother shave than ever before. It's a simple combination of great products, amazing customer support, free delivery, and fair prices that has made Cornerstone the fastest growing shaving company in the UK. It's basically shaving's equivalent to Max Verstappen. They've won numerous awards for their super sharp German engineered razor, just think Mercedes, and outstanding customer support, like a Charlie Whiting hotline, along with endless plaudits from the media, including GQ, Esquire, and the Daily Telegraph. That would be Max Verstappen again. Cornerstone know they need to earn your trust, though, so to let you try their award-winning razor for a fraction of the standard price, with this offer you can get £10 off their razor and get started for just £4. Just visit cornerstone.co.uk and enter the code NRF1 at checkout. Visit cornerstone.co.uk to find out what a smooth shave actually feels like, and if you don't like your Cornerstone razor, Cornerstone will even give you your money back, no questions asked. Now, let's get back to that NRF1 podcast, shall we? All right, well, that's enough of Mercedes, but clearly we'll see how everything pans out over the winter, and we'll look forward to what testing looks like. At least we know that Lewis will be in one of the seats now. That's no longer up for discussion. Just for the end of this part one, I wanted to touch on, just in general, the season. How is this season going to be viewed? Let's pretend we're history in 5 years' time. How is this season going to be viewed? Was it a classic? Was it a good one? Right person claimed the crown at the end of it?
I think they'll kind of say, looking back, it'll be like the world champion that never was in a lot of ways. Because he's won the world championship, but he's not going to defend it. So there's going to be no number one car on the grid next year. And, of course, there's argument as to whether he deserved it or not, which personally I would say he does deserve it.
But there wasn't a number one car on the grid this year, because Hamilton still raced in 44.
It's true. I was saying the figurative number one.
Yeah. But then, also, is Rosberg going to do a Schumacher? And then suddenly, 3 or 4 years' time, when his kid's able to walk and talk and understand Formula One, come back.
Maybe his kid will be a Formula One driver. Is his child a boy or a girl? Do we know?
It's a girl.
Well, not that that should matter, because I'd like to think that by the time Nico Rosberg's child is old enough, they could drive.
Oh my God, how good would that be? Oh no, she's preggo, isn't she? Damn. Susie Wolf in the spare Merc.
Would have been an interesting dynamic, wouldn't it? Because, you know, it literally wouldn't have taken much for her to get through to Toto.
No, exactly. She's pregnant. And the best thing about her being pregnant, and I don't rate the Channel 4 coverage much, but the fact that who's the Welsh guy that presents it?
Steve Jones.
The fact that every time he mentions the fact that she's pregnant, he points to her uterus and shouts, "Wolf cub." That's probably the best piece of presenting, television presenting I've ever seen. And it's consistent. It's at every single show now. It's brilliant.
He's nothing but consistent, Steve Jones. You can definitely say that much.
Who was the test driver for Lotus Formula One team? She was a leggy.
Carmen Jorda.
Jorda. Yeah. See, I would replace JB with her for my choice too.
She was shocking though.
Well, she can't.
She couldn't drive. She was like 5 seconds slower than anybody else in GP3. There's a reason why she was there.
What was that, Kyle?
I think sponsors.
Sponsors.
She's good to sponsors.
Oh, diplomat.
She was good to sponsors.
We've just lost 25% of our listeners because of that.
No, it's not that much. I don't think.
There's a lot more talented female drivers out there.
Which, well,
there should be some in Formula One by now.
There should be, and that would definitely be a goal scored if Mercedes could pull that one out. Danica Patrick. I assume she's the best driver in NASCAR, not the one I've just seen most of on Twitter and things.
She was quite successful. She got pole at Indy, I think, and has done quite well. I think she's probably a little bit old for a move to Formula One now, because she's been around the block. Track.
DT's laughing. I'm just watching you dig your hole, mate.
So she's not a spring chicken anymore.
Excellent. Well, that went really well. Anyway, I'm pretty sure this was.
She's been NASCAR since about 2012.
How old is she? Because clearly that was an issue.
How old is she? She is 34 years old.
That's younger than me, so that's absolutely fine.
She's 5'2" and she weighs 45 kilograms. I mean, there's more fuel in the car than that. That's ridiculous. She'd rocket around that track. Right, that's it. Start the movement. Why not Danica?
Why not Danica?
And she races for Stuart Haas Racing. Oh. Kyle, what do you know?
Could be. I'm not saying anything.
I'm not saying anything. He never says anything. Right, well, anyway, yeah, how is the season going to be viewed in history? That was it. Did we enjoy it? Was it a good season?
It was different. I think, like, over the last 3 years, 2014, I think, was probably the better of the three with the Mercedes dominance. I think last year was great for the British fans, but it was a foregone conclusion probably halfway through the season. But this season was kind of a bit of a strange one, really, because we never really got as such to see a sort of a proper Hamilton Rosberg fight, really, as such.
Not after the halfway point, did we? That was the thing.
No, and there was always the conspiracy theories going round because of obviously all the mechanical failures that he had, and it's just a bit strange, really. I wouldn't sort of really rate it, to be honest. I mean, we had some good races, but overall, not one of the better seasons.
I think it could go down as a very good season. The emergence of Max Verstappen. Who, if you look back, say 20 years' time, we look back, we can say, oh, that was his first year, that was his first win, he moved up to Red Bull, blah, blah, blah.
Spanish Grand Prix will be forever etched in his history.
Yeah. And we can say, also, the collision between the two title contenders in Spain, and also the last lap crash in Austria between going for the race win, which doesn't happen very often, Formula One. And also, the last race was quite entertaining, and the controversy following that, and Rosberg retiring. So I think, further we go in 20 years' time, we might look back at it, roast into glasses, and say it was a very good season. But I think the problem was it was such a long season, and there's a lot of races that were quite average, which at the moment looks like a an average season. But yeah.
It was 21 races this year, which I think is more than we've ever had before. So that, I think, maybe added to that. But I guess given we had a dominant car, a totally dominant car, we actually didn't have too bad a season given that situation.
No, and there was enough. I think the problem you have is you always remember the headlines from the races and you always remember the winners and you always remember the champions. But I think it's just, you don't actually look at how closely bunched the rest of the field was. And I mean, this is the season where, I mean, crikey, Manor were ahead of Sauber until like the last two races. And there was some really good midfield racing. But that won't be remembered. We'll only remember the headlines. And it will be remembered as Rosberg's lone bright spot in an otherwise dark sea of Hamilton.
And we haven't even mentioned qualifying, which we'll do, of course, in our other podcasts. DT, did you try and get my attention with something on your phone a little while ago?
You were talking about how this was actually a really long season. I have a little fact here for you, that it was actually the joint longest in the history of the sport. So the 2016 Formula One season was the joint longest in the history of the sport, 23 characters long. We found it funny.
Where did you get that from, DT?
Bad F1 stats on Twitter.
Excellent. I think we should have more of those in our other parts.
Maybe I didn't do it justice.
I think you definitely did it justice. That's fine.
I'm not sure what more you could have done with it, mate. I mean, it was...
Yeah, there we go. Well, I think we should call that a wrap on part one of our 2016 season review here from the Rush Cutters Pub in Norwich, Norfolk, UK. But just a couple of plugs. Don't forget, you can support the podcast in numerous ways, but the best way at the moment is to become one of our patrons at Patreon, patreon.com/NRF1. We've got a merry little bunch on there, but they're making a big difference to how much we can spread the word of this podcast, and I'm quite excited about what we can do with it next year too. So visit there. If you like what you're listening to, we really appreciate your ears, and if you feel like you want to help us spread to more ears, then click on the link. patreon.com/NRF1. And as always, nrf1.uk/is on iTunes. Pop over there and give us a review and a rate if you like, just to make sure that everyone on the great old iTunes knows we're there and that you enjoy us. But I think we're going to call that a wrap on part one of our 2016 season review here on the NRF1 podcast. Thanks, gents, to Rich, DT, Kyle, Steve, Ped. We will be back momentarily with part two once we've just had a little refresh. And at that point, we will go through our final NRF1 pit stops of the season and also our of the season awards. And then we'll have part three where we get into the serious stuff. But until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.